prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free. We are Truth Revolution. I am Dave, and with me is Pastor Jeff of Revolution Church.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm glad to be here.
Oh, so am I.
It's a beautiful morning.
It is.
Although it's getting too cold, but this is where faith and reason meet, even when it's insanely cold outside.
Head on.
So we love science, and we love religion. Mm-hmm. We love knowledge, and we love faith.
Right.
And we don't think these things contradict each other.
Right. Now, this is the place where faith and reason meet so hard that it's hard to tell where one ends and the other begins.
Like a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Exactly like that.
It's just chocolate and peanut butter. You take one bite and bam, you get them both. It's good.
We got a great show lined up for you today.
That's right.
You got a Bible contradiction as usual.
There's a big problem. What was in the Ark of the Covenant?
Oh yeah?
First Kings says there was only one thing, and the other part of the Bible in Hebrew says there was more than one thing. What's going on? Did the Bible lie to you?
That's a legitimate contradiction.
Yeah.
Well, maybe. I'm going to go out on a limb here.
Let's just end the show now. It's over.
Right.
All right. We also, there is a guy named Joseph Atwill who has written a book, and he's now doing seminars called Caesar's Messiah. And the basic concept here is that Jesus was not real. He was merely a Roman invention.
Ah, you know, when I first heard that, I was like, oh no, snap. And then I thought, wait a minute, we've been doing this program for almost 2 years now.
Yeah. Wait a minute. There's answers to Timothy's objections.
Yeah, there's answers to this stuff.
So is there an answer to his objections?
Right.
I've got the book. I've read the book. And most importantly, we've brought on a specialist for today. His name is Dr. Gary Habermas, and he is brilliant. Dr. Habermas, thank you for joining us today.
Well, it sounds like you're having fun already, so I'll fit right in here.
Right on.
Oh, yeah, that's great. And Dr. Habermas has written a number of books, including one of my favorites called The Historical Jesus. Now, you actually wrote that one quite a number of years ago. When was that one written? Do you remember?
96, I'll say.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was before Dave was born.
Whatever.
But, this book was really instrumental when I was getting my degree at Biola and my master's, and I thank you for it. You've also written some books about NDEs, which we've done a show about, and the Shroud of Turin. Just really quickly, what is the Shroud of Turin?
What is it?
Yeah.
It's purported to be the burial garment of Jesus. It's a little over 14 feet long. It's a little over 3.5 feet wide. And it buried a body in a way that a lot of people don't think is normal Jewish burial. But if you can picture kind of a sheet, it's linen.
Mm-hmm.
And it wrapped from head to toe in the front and around the head, and then from the back of the head to the bottoms of the feet on the reverse, and that's why it's so long.
Interesting.
And there's a double image of a man, a crucified man, on the cloth, and he's lying on his back, and he's in a state of rigor mortis, and for a number of reasons, he's dead. His arms are crossed in front of him at the wrist.
Yeah.
He's got five major wounds with crucifixion. He's been beaten very severely, and some people think that the image got there because of the resurrection. So
fascinating.
A lot of potential.
And that's, I'm just going to want to do the show on that now.
Right. Let's not get off track.
Okay.
Jeff.
You've got a lot of information about that as well as other subjects. If anyone wants to find out more about you, your ministry, is there a website they can go to?
Yes. I would recommend my own website for this reason. I don't sell anything, and there's a lot of material, video, audio, portions of books, I think even two full books. Two of my three books on doubt are on the website. So since you guys do this kind of show with faith and reason, you probably have some folks who struggle, whether or not they've come through it already. They probably know people who are struggling, and two doubt books are there, and a lot of other things. I hope it'll be ministerial for people.
That's great. And just so everybody knows, your website is actually GaryHabermas.com, right?
Yes, it is. I didn't even say that. that's magical. I expected people to know what it was.
Yes. Yeah. HABERMAS, GaryHabermas.com.
Right. We'll put that up on the
that's
website.
Right.
All right.
That's
so, right. So, yeah.
No bells and whistles or underlining or anything. That's it.
Good deal. Now, we're going to jump into this stuff. Joseph Atwill, he has written a book called Caesar's Messiah, and he says that Jesus wasn't real. And this is kind of a big deal. I'm just going to throw this open. I want some people to hear some of the opening questions that he asks in his book, in the concept file for his video.
Who was Jesus? Is he a historical character? Who wrote the Gospels? Why are they written in Greek? Why did they have a pro-Roman perspective? Why was the religion headquartered in Rome?
Okay, there we go. We have four or five big questions here.
Mm-hmm.
And these are kind of the driving points. So let me just ask you, Dr. Habermas, really quickly, because he seems to ask these questions and they seem provocative. Who wrote the Gospels and why were they written in Greek?
Well, you know what? He only makes a few comments there, and I'm sitting here going, okay, that one's wrong. I mean, to start off the bat and get things mixed up right away is you know, an issue. To say the Gospels are pro-Roman, I mean, for example, and once again, you know, all together now, who killed Jesus?
The Romans.
and so, I mean, why even blame it on the Romans? If it's pro-Rome, why not blame it on the Jews or something? So.
Hey, that's a really good point. Yeah.
The Greek question. Greek was the universal language at that time. You see a lot of ancient writings in Greek. There's even, it's small, but there's even a small portion of the Old Testament that's written in Greek. A little bit in Aramaic, and of course most of it's in Hebrew. The vast majority of the Old Testament's in Hebrew. But I'm just saying, if even the Old Testament has even a few verses in Greek, I mean, why did they do that? And you say, well, I don't know, they were exiled. But they were exiled east. They weren't exiled toward Greece.
So
why are they, you know, talking like that? So Greek is the universal language. The epistles are all written in Greek. That seems to be the parlance of the people. Paul, you know, they spoke Greek and everything else.
So. Just like today, if someone was starting a religion and they wrote some of their books in English, we wouldn't say, wow, they must have been supported by the U.S. government.
Right.
We would say, well, yeah, English is a very common language right now.
Yeah, in fact, I just got back from Sweden. I was there for 2 weeks, and I was translated a few times. But over there, almost all my lectured 42 times. So the vast majority of my lectures were in English.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's the lingua franca, as they say. It's the language of the people. By the way, I said a moment ago that they spoke Greek. We do believe that Jesus' original language was Aramaic, but folks at that time were quite bilingual, and the fact that the New Testament writers, as far as we know, everything in the originals is written in Greek. So that just shows you how the emphasis between their language, much like Sweden, the emphasis is between the language they speak and another language that they understand.
Do you think that changed much from the time of Jesus' life and the time that the Gospels were actually written? Or do you think Greek was the official language even during Jesus' life?
Well, I think it was the official language of the empire. Now, Jesus, I mean, you know, the Romans are around, and that's the trade language, and Sepphoris, a city fairly close to where Jesus grew up, is a little more secular and open to Greco-Roman culture than other places. So, I mean, it was around, but still, I think it's clear that Jesus spoke Aramaic. We don't know if he spoke Greek or not, but the fact that the Gospels are written in Greek, I mean, let's remember something else, too. The Gospel of Matthew, the Gospel of Luke, the Book of Acts. Matthew and Luke end with a charge to the disciples to evangelize. Acts starts with a charge to evangelize. What good would it do to go, you know, the famous Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and an uttermost part of the earth? What good is it to get outside of Israel and start talking Aramaic?
Right, true.
You know, it'd be like, use my example. I didn't mean that the example to work so well, but it really does.
Mm-hmm.
If you were raised in Sweden and you spoke Swedish, how many places would that be good?
That would be a problem.
You don't get very far.
Right.
That's kind of the issue. If you want to evangelize, you better get with the program. You better talk what people know how to talk.
Sure. When we send missionaries to countries that speak Spanish, nobody accuses us of being a product of the Spanish king. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, that part was just ridiculous. The part about it's a pro-Roman book. Why? Because Jesus told them, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I mean, that hardly outweighs the fact that Pilate condemned him to death. The Romans beat him up, and the Romans killed him.
Yeah.
I think those are little bigger things than give the coins back to him.
All right. Here in one of the clips of his film, he quotes a guy named John Hudson. Let's listen to that really quickly.
In all of this, we're dealing with literature. We're not dealing with history. So the answer is no, there is no history to this character of Jesus. It's entirely a literary creation.
It's entirely a literary creation, the life of Jesus. How would you respond to that right off the bat? I mean, my mind's going, oh, wait a minute. Flashing red lights here.
Well, I don't know how many different levels you want me to respond at, but I would say some things like this. All right, so we're doing a Christian show here, so people expect us to say something different. Mm-hmm. But if Atwell thinks his book is so good, and he thinks that he's the one who's discovered this secret code that almost nobody's known before him, why doesn't he send it to one of the big-named, most liberal New Testament guys in the world? Mm. Like, why doesn't he send it to Bart Ehrman at University of North Carolina? Yeah. Why doesn't he send it to John Dominic Crossan? Why doesn't he send it to Marcus Borg? Very well-known critics, and let's see what they say. They're going to say it's a bunch of baloney. So these are people without a Christian axe to grind, like Bart Ehrman says.
Yeah.
When he wrote his book, Did Jesus Exist? He says, don't get mad at me. I'm an agnostic leaning toward atheism. I'm not a Christian. I'm just telling you what history says. And since I'm on that subject, that's a different way to respond. Bart Ehrman, again, agnostic leaning toward atheism and a non-Christian, he says that the crucifixion of Jesus is one of the best established events of the ancient world. In fact, Dom Crossan says it's probably the best established event in the ancient world. But
and we can't miss this.
Bart Ehrman.
Crossan, I just want to make sure the listeners understand. Crossan, who said the crucifixion of Jesus is one of the best established facts of history, he is not a Christian in terms of what we would understand a Christian.
Neither one of these guys, Bart Ehrman nor Dom Crossan, neither one of them believe in the resurrection.
Right.
And yet they say that Jesus' resurrection is firm. Now, ancient scholars measure things in terms of good sources. The Jesus Seminar, which is not conservative, it's a group that Dom Crossan was instrumental in starting. They rejected the vast majority of the so-called red-letter words of Jesus. They say that if you have two independent sources for a teaching or action of Jesus, you've raised your chances significantly of having an historical word or historical action. All right, two, many historical events in the ancient world rest on one source, and yet, back to Bart Ehrman, he lists about a dozen sources for the crucifixion of Jesus. Only eight of them are in the New Testament.
Interesting.
And four are outside the New Testament, and four, at least two, and maybe four, are non-Christian.
Of those non-Christian ones, are you speaking about like Tacitus and Suetonius and guys like
Tacitus, Josephus? And if you want, Tacitus and Josephus are the best. And if you want to move, see, Bart Ehrman only goes 100 years after the death of Jesus. Now, he might grant more than that, but that's just the time that he picks these 11 or 12 sources. If you were to extend that a mere 50, 60 more years, so to 150, 60, 70 years after the cross, you would double your number of sources from about a dozen to just short of two dozen.
Wow.
And most of your sources would be non-Christian.
And that's fascinating because it's not like they're trying to push an agenda if they're non-Christian.
Right.
Now,
we're
coming up to a break here.
For him to sit there and say, oh, wow, it's this kind of book and that kind of book, and then for the other fellow to say, it's literary and there's no history, that's amazing. Because you've got these non-Christian writers saying, we know who this guy is. I just finished an essay today
I'll tell you what. We have to get to a break right now, and so I'm gonna catch that on the other side of this break. In the meantime, listeners, get on over to truthrevolution.tv because we're gonna do a little extra with Dr. Habermas.
Oh, yeah.
Online only. You can tell there's a lot of this topic going on. So we're gonna come back on the other side of this break. We're gonna do a Bible contradiction. Get on over to truthrevolution.tv and come on out to Revolution Church Sunday mornings 9 and 11:15.
Hey, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church.
And I'm Dave. We've been growing and now we're going to two services.
Sunday morning at 9 a.m. or 11:15 a.m. Check us out at salinarevolution.com.
What if someone had never been to church before?
Well, most people here hadn't been for a long, long time, if ever, so don't worry, you'll fit in fine.
What to wear? Just be yourself. Jeans, t-shirt, tats, whatever.
Revolution Church, Sunday morning, 9 or 11:15 a.m.
salinarevolution.com or check us out on Facebook.
Revolution!
Hi, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church. Not only am I the host of the Truth Revolution radio program, but I'm also a foster parent. Did you know that there are only 20 or 30 children in Salina that need to be adopted right now? Did you know that there are children in foster care who want to live in Salina, but are sometimes placed in other towns because we don't have enough foster homes here? I want to challenge you to consider foster care today. If you're interested in doing foster care, go to kfapa.com, that's K-F-A-P-A, as in the Kansas Foster and Adoptive Parent Association.com, K-F-A-P-A.com, and get more information. You can request information, email and ask any questions you want, or possibly even sign up to take a class about foster parenting. It's easier and more difficult than you'd ever imagine, but it's also more rewarding than you'd ever imagine. Consider fostering and helping a child in need today.
Truth Shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
Sometimes critics will point to prayer studies to show that God doesn't actually exist because they usually show prayer doesn't help.
So should we reject prayer?
Jesus already told us what he thought about it.
And Jesus is important. We can demonstrate he fulfilled prophecy and rose from the dead.
In Matthew 12, we read, some people said, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you."
But Jesus replied, "A wicked and adulterous generation asks for a sign, but none will be given it."
Does it sound like he appreciates being studied and experimented on?
Not particularly. And know what we aren't saying. We aren't saying that God is untestable. You just have to believe.
Right. There are plenty of ways to know if Jesus is the real deal. But making him or God the Father the subject of a prayer study doesn't make sense if he's already indicated he wouldn't participate.
Jesus made it clear that he's not an experiment. So don't be surprised when he doesn't participate.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Did you know that Truth Revolution is supported by Revolution Church and listeners like you?
It takes quite a bit of time and money to produce a quality radio show.
If you find Truth Revolution helpful, a donation would be a powerful way to make sure the message keeps going out.
This ministry is doing more than Dave and I imagined it would at the beginning.
You got that right.
And as we grow, we want to keep the goal the same. To be the place where faith and reason meet.
Donations are accepted at www.truthrevolution.tv or Revolution Church.
Truth Revolution.
And we're back. We're talking to Gary Habermas today about the possibility that Jesus being a Roman invention.
He was an intervention. Yeah. You know, I would agree that he was an intervention.
Definitely in history.
So we are talking with Gary Habermas today, Dr. Gary Habermas of Liberty University. And if you want to check out more of what he has to say, you can get on over to GaryHabermas.com and view all sorts of great information, videos, articles, audio.
Right. And we'll put a link up to his website on our website so that you can get there easily.
Yes. He's a very distinguished scholar. He's written multiple books, The Historical Jesus, The Case for the Resurrection of Jesus, The Risen Jesus, Resurrected, In Defense of Miracles, and other books. And so, thanks for being with us today. So far, I have really been blessed by what you've had to say about Atwell's claims. Just in general, what would you say Atwell's claims are tantamount to? Are we dealing with a real serious scholar here, or are we dealing with something less than that?
I don't know. I've heard him called a Bible scholar. I've heard some other people on some of the things I've read, blogs and whatnot, be very, very critical of his scholarly credentials. I was sent a critique of one of the best-known Jesus critics, in the world who comes very close to saying Jesus never lived.
Yeah.
And he went off on that, Will.
Oh,
he
really?
The book. Yeah, he was very... And this guy's got two PhDs.
And he doesn't want to admit Jesus exists.
I'm sorry?
And this guy doesn't want to admit Jesus exists. It sounds like he might reluctantly admit.
But he doesn't think there's anything... Let's put it this way. He's not about to change his views because of that. Well,
nice.
Okay. Now, I want to really get into what some of the specifics were of what Atwell had to say here. Let's listen to this quote from him.
The reason that the Romans wanted to create their own Savior Messiah is because they wanted to have a pacifistic Christ.
Okay, so that was the main thing. They wanted a pacifistic Christ so the Jews wouldn't rebel. Now, have we bought this hook, line, and sinker? Because our church is actually kind of a pacifist church here, Dr. Habermas. Have we just bought this line, hook, line, and sinkers? Did the Romans want a pacifistic Christ?
Now you say your church does buy into that?
Well, we buy into pacifism. Yeah, the denomination does.
At least that Jesus was non-confrontational.
Right. Yes, that's right.
You know, put your sword away and so on.
Exactly.
Well, okay, first of all, I think it's a moot point. I think it makes no difference.
Mm.
The question, I mean, whether he's a pacifist or not, the question is, what does the New Testament teach?
Mm.
And let's just say for the sake of the argument, I mean, there's more than one view on the subject, but let's say your view is Jesus is pacifistic, mm-hmm. and Atwell says, wow, that shows my thesis. The Romans wanted him to be pacifistic. Okay, great. I don't doubt that the Romans wanted him to be a pacifist because I don't doubt that the Romans didn't want him raising a rebellion, like, you know, what's going to happen 40 years later when Jerusalem goes down. And then about 50 years after that, it happens again.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
But it's a question of whether he's a pacifist or not. If he is, he is. If that makes the Romans pleased, so be it. That doesn't that doesn't change what Jesus taught, and that doesn't make Atwell right. It doesn't follow at all. It's what philosophers call a non sequitur statement. His conclusion does not follow from that premise.
Exactly. One of the questions we love to ask here is, let's assume your primary claim or evidence is true. Does that mean that God doesn't exist or that Jesus didn't rise from the dead? No, it doesn't. It doesn't follow. You know, even he's going to talk here about the Flavian Empire and how the Gospels corresponded to the Flavian Empire. And you know what? Even if the Gospels do reflect and echo the Flavian Empire in Rome, it doesn't mean Jesus didn't exist. I mean, even if it were true, there could be other explanations. The gospel writers could have been writing a polemic against the Flavian Empire, just like some people think the book of Genesis lines up with other creation stories. Well, it doesn't mean Genesis didn't happen. It just means when it was written to show that the Jewish God was the one true God and not these other ones. It was a polemic. It was written against something. That's a possibility. So,
yeah, it is. And I think it's just pretty plain that the New Testament is, whatever view you take of Jesus, pacifism or whatever, I think the New Testament is a fairly apolitical book.
Mm.
You know, you can take different positions on certain things, because the New Testament says pray for the king. The New Testament says mm-hmm. pay your taxes, and not just Jesus, but the epistles too. And
wait a minute, pay your taxes. he's obviously a flaming conservative,
right?
We should just write this off. All right, just kidding.
Yeah.
Look, tell you what, we're gonna jump in and answer a Bible contradiction, and then get right back to this.
That's fine.
Bible contradiction.
All right, Bible contradiction today brought to you by the Skeptic's Annotated Bible.
Okay, was this an online source here?
Yeah, it is. The SkepticsAnnotatedBible.com. And it actually, at first blush, it looks like something a bunch of atheists put together, but it's not.
It's not.
They actually answer Bible contradictions. So
they do?
Yeah.
Oh. Kind of. So this is not from a critical source.
Well, this comes from, they take critical sources and basically answer them.
Gotcha,
so,
okay.
All right, so here it was. What was in the Ark of the Covenant? Only two tablets of Moses, that's in 1 Kings 8:9 and 2 Chronicles 5:10. And then you skip on over to the New Testament in Hebrews 9:4. It says the Ark of the Covenant overlaid round with gold, wherein lies the golden pot that had manna, and Aaron's rod that budded, and the tables of the covenant. What gives? I mean, 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles says, there was only the tablets.
Only the tablets.
Yeah. Hebrews says he had all three.
All three things. What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, using our CRACKED acronym, which is what we use to solve Bible contradictions,
right.
We have C-R-A-C-K-E-D. The very first C is the one that's the most important. Context. You got to look at the context and read it around.
Right.
Okay, let's just read the context here. 1 Kings 8, verse 9. It said there was nothing in the ark save the two tablets of stone. Okay, that looks like it conflicts with Hebrews.
Right.
But read the context. The sentence isn't even over yet. It says, when they came out of the land of Egypt. So this is not talking about forever and all time. This is talking about one moment in history.
Right.
In one moment in history, there were only two tablets of stone in there.
Gotcha.
Later on, however, they added things to the Ark of the Covenant. And so you get the book of Hebrews saying, yeah, there was the tables of the covenant. There was Aaron's rod that budded. There was the golden pot that had manna. And so this isn't a contradiction. This is very simply, and honestly, this is a really bad contradiction because at least
it is now that I'm looking at it.
At least half the time, you know, when they take something out of context, they didn't read like the paragraph or the chapter. This
right.
one, they didn't even finish the sentence. like you got to read the whole sentence and figure out what's really going on. So, all right, that's the answer for a Bible contradiction today.
Bible contradiction.
Wow.
All right.
So much for that one.
All right, so back to the Atwell discovery. Dr. Habermas, I'd like to go ahead and read some quotes from his book where he shows that the Gospels are nothing but a similarity or a copy of the Flavian Roman Empire. And I'd like you to respond to some of these things. Would that be okay with you?
Sure.
All right. He says, here's some actual similarities in the book. For instance, fishing for the men at the Sea of Galilee. He says, Josephus and Luke each record a catching of men at the Sea of Galilee. The typological linkage is obvious and covered in depth. While at the Sea of Galilee, Jesus predicted that his followers would fish for men. In Luke 5:10, it says, from now on, you will catch men. Then he says, Titus's followers then fished for men on the Sea of Galilee. And here's a quote from The Wars of Jews. It says, and for such as were drowning in the sea, if they lifted their heads up above the water, they were either killed by darts or caught by the vessels. And so he says, this right here shows that both Jesus and Titus were fishing for men at the Sea of Galilee. And this is a really, really close connection to the Gospels and the Flavian Empire. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, sounds like a direct quote, doesn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Tell me again, I missed a little bit of your quote. Now, who's saying this, Josephus?
Josephus was recording a catching of men.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And yeah. He's talking about the Sea of Galilee. Okay, now what is it again? Something either happened or something else happened.
And for such as were drowning at the sea, if they lifted their heads up above the water, they were either killed by darts or caught by vessels.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so in one of them, it's like, I don't know if it's in a war setting, but it's a setting where people are being killed, right? They're either
yes.
being shot, basically,
mm-hmm.
with darts, or they're being run over. And that's supposed to be the same thing as, you know, it seems to me that what's going on with the people in the Sea of Galilee in the secular source is negative, right? We want to kill you.
Yes.
And the Gospels, it's we want to give you eternal life. It's exactly the opposite.
The opposite.
Another issue is that you have the Gospels written either before or at the latest, about the same time as Josephus.
Mm.
So in those days, you can't just go down the library and say, you know, give me volume one of Josephus. You know, these guys would be contemporary, or the Gospels might even be earlier. So let's say Josephus copied off the Gospels, which is silly that he did mm-hmm. not do that. But I'm just saying, if the source predates Josephus, what's the deal here?
The copy then?
How
right.
does that work?
And I think he's going to argue that the Gospels were an invention of the Jews.
But, right.
You know, it's interesting. All right. Wow. I can't believe our time is up. This has been so quick, but we have more online.
Yes, we'll do it online, so hop on over to truthrevolution.tv.
And we'll have more with Dr. Gary Habermas there. If you want to know more about him, go to GaryHabermas.com or over to our website.
Truthrevolution.tv.
And at truthrevolution.tv, we'll have a link to his website, as well as more, because we're not done yet.
Right.
We're going to talk a little bit more about this book and some of the objections that Atwill raises to Christianity.
Right. Don't forget, head over to Revolution Church.
That's right. You can come right now, however you're dressed, whatever you look like, whatever you smell like. Mm-hmm. We don't care. We just want you here.
That's right.
This is about finding Jesus, learning about God. It's not about following a religious form. It's about getting to know who God is and what does he want from us.
Amen.
So Jesus has mercy. So, all right. Coming out to Revolution Church, 9 o'clock, 11:15 a.m. every Sunday. And get on over to truthrevolution.tv. We'll catch you online for the rest of this.
Truth Revolution.
And we're online.
Thanks for coming online to truthrevolution.tv and listening to the rest of the show. This is going to be good. All right, so, Dr. Habermas, we answered one of the things about fishing from the Sea of Galilee. It really looked more like the opposite rather right. than a similarity here.
Yeah, one of them's getting killed and one of them's getting saved. I mean, and not just that.
It's not even close.
We talked earlier too about the Greek, which is no issue.
Yeah,
we talked earlier about the Romans or the heroes when they killed Jesus. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's several topics, and it just doesn't measure up to the data.
That's right. It's fascinating. Okay, I'm going to read you another quote. He says, "Here's another similarity," and this is number 13 of his similarities. He says, "On the way to Jerusalem, messengers were sent ahead." For both people. Okay, he says, quote, "At the end of his Galilean campaign, Luke recorded that Jesus marched out of Galilee towards Jerusalem. When read in the perspective of this analysis, Luke's words are chilling and their meaning transparent." He quotes Luke 9. "Now it came to pass, when the time had come for him to be received up, that he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem and sent messengers by his face." Then he says, "Josephus, keeping in sequence, recorded that Titus then marched on to Jerusalem like his typological forerunner." He's talking about Jesus. "He sent, or John, he sent out messengers, his legions before him." And he quotes Wars of the Jews. "Titus, when he had gotten together part of his forces about him and he had ordered the rest to meet him at Jerusalem, marched out of Caesarea." Now, there's an obvious similarity here to what's going on. What would you think about this?
It sounds like the dying in the Sea of Galilee thing. I mean, right. First of all, Jerusalem is the New York City of the ancient world.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, at least of Israel, not the whole world. I mean, Rome would be that, but
right.
But Jerusalem is the New York City of Israel. A lot of people go to New York City. If I get in a car and go to New York City tomorrow from where I am, and you guys get in the car and go to New York City tomorrow, which is way closer than this illustration.
Mm. Right.
Does that mean that we're both going to New York City for the same reason? You know, we're both going to a rock concert, or we're both going to see a play that's opening in New York City? No, there's millions of people. There are a lot of things going on. So the fact that two groups are going to Jerusalem is ridiculous. Secondly, why is he going to Jerusalem? I mean, Jesus ends up dying in Jerusalem, but he also tries to minister in Jerusalem.
Right.
The Romans are sending legions ahead of them. So thousands of men going to Jerusalem is the same as Jesus' little band going to Jerusalem. And they're coming up with swords and spears and helmets and breastplates and all that, and Jesus is going up to preach.
Well, Peter did bring a sword, didn't he?
Yeah, Jesus told him to put it away. So
right.
Apparently he had a different meaning. But what I'm saying is, take the idea of Jerusalem here again. I mean, it would be true if it was the smallest city in Jerusalem.
Right.
But I mean, in Israel. But the largest city, people go to Jerusalem for a lot of different reasons. It is the center of the country.
Yeah.
And so to say, oh, wow, they're going to Jerusalem. Well, wow, so are we. Must be for the same reason. It's just silliness.
Yeah.
I don't even know how people can get away with saying these things because, I mean, it would seem to me that you'd have to have a huge presupposition before you started that, you know, that looks for anything or that doesn't have a sense of history before you would you know, buy into something like this.
That absolutely makes sense. I mean, really, Jerusalem, like you said, was the center of their life. And I'm sure there were more connections and more, quote, typological resources than other,
sure.
than besides just Titus and Jesus. There was probably a dozen that you could find that had a military campaign or someone who claimed to be a Messiah that came out of Jerusalem.
Well, it'd be almost like the same thing as if I went to Jerusalem. You could say, hey,
hey, Dave,
there's a correlation there.
Dave's the Messiah.
Right.
Well,
oh, boy, let's not say that.
You know what? I mean, if you guys even said, hey, what are you doing? I'm going to New York to see a ball game. And you said, a baseball game. And you said, I'm going to see a ball game, too. Really? What kind of game? Football. Oh, I'm going to see baseball. Okay,
yeah.
That doesn't work. See,
right.
I mean, even superficially, or if you said, go to a baseball game, who do you see? I'm seeing the Mets, so I'm seeing the Yankees, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's just so many, and the illustrations are nowhere near even that close, and yet, in a big city, there's just too much stuff. But you know what? In both the illustrations you raised there, the last two, it's military and death versus life.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to be the same thing.
Oh, and that's interesting because the Roman military brought death and enslavement to a lot of people.
Right.
The whole concept of Jesus was to bring life and forgiveness and love to everybody, whether you're a Roman or whether you were a Jew or whoever you
sure.
were. The Romans.
And remember their major things that they're known for. Jesus says in Acts, beginning in Jerusalem. So that's the beginning point of giving the life. What do the Romans do? In 70 A.D., Jesus predicted it, but in 70 A.D.,
they
sacked the city.
Yep.
Josephus tells us they crucified thousands of people. I mean, those are two entirely different purposes for the same city.
Yeah, if they were trying to raise up a pretend Jewish Messiah, they really had a bad idea of how to handle that after the fact. I mean, sacking the temple.
They killed him.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Why do you kill the guy who's flying your banner?
Right.
Now, let me guess. He's going to say something like, well, he got out of control. I mean, you know, whenever you don't want a thesis to work, you just make up another little one when it goes awry, you know?
Right.
If you're already going to make up the thesis, just do another twist in the road. It doesn't make any difference.
We have this little phrase we like. We say, correlation is not causation. You know, just because you can find some sort of correlation, just because you can make something up, doesn't mean there was a cause there. Doesn't mean it was linked in the way
exactly.
you assume.
Excellent, excellent point. If you did that philosophically, if your listeners like big words, they're basically saying that coherence, a theory of cohering,
yeah.
is a theory of causality, and they are not the same. Coherence
right.
is a lesser standard than causality is.
And we're interested
coherence means going along next to. It doesn't mean I'm you. It doesn't mean I caused you. You caused me. It doesn't mean anything like that. In fact, if your whole argument is coherent, if your whole, you can have, you know, every religion in the world, theoretically, could be coherent. Every religion in the world could hang together well, and only one might be true.
Right. Our only question is, does it correspond to reality?
Right. We did an entire show on that one time.
Yeah,
that's correct. Oh, you're right. That's an excellent point. I'm so glad you said it because I like to make that point all the time in apologetics. And correlation is just that, correlation. So back to your other principle, grant his point. And if his point is, look how similar this is. All right, the first response is, that's a joke. They're not similar at all.
Right.
But secondly, even if they're similar, similarity does not prove anything.
That's right. All right, I'm going to read another one of his quotes. Actually, I want to read two more, but this next one's more for kicks and giggles, really, because it's almost to the point of being ridiculous. He says, number 19, Josephus and Luke each record the Jews massing around the Son of God. And he quotes Luke 11, as the crowds were increasing, and then to show that they were revolving around the Flavians, in the War of Jews, Josephus writes, the Jews became still more and more in number. Well, what on earth?
What's that supposed to mean?
That's what this boggles my mind. Just because crowds surrounded Jesus and just because crowds surrounded Titus does not mean there was a correlation here that says that they were the same person or that you were making a typological exchange here. That's not what he was. I don't know.
In every case, we've raised, it's important that correlations do not provide proof. So at best, the argument doesn't work. But there's a worse problem, and you just pointed it out. It's not even a correlation.
Yeah. Now, here's number 26. This is the last one of these we'll do. He quotes Luke 14. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Okay, Luke 14. Then he quotes The Wars of the Jews by Josephus. Titus went round the wall looking for the best place to build the tower.
Wow. Those are two exact things. You lay them right next to each other. They say the same thing.
I was sitting here going, all right, go ahead, finish it. Oh, you were done.
No, that was it. Luke quoted the wars, obviously.
You know, I'm just not hearing anything, so I'm saying surely more is coming. No.
Yeah. I walked out today earlier when I was getting this material ready, mm-hmm. and I'm laughing. I look at my secretary, and I say, I love this. I love when someone comes out with objections to the existence of Jesus. And she says, why? Because you love to defeat the argument? I said, no. Because they never have good arguments.
Yeah, the argument defeats itself every single time.
Unfortunately, people, I could tell you, fellows, that having done 3 books on doubt and having gone through it myself for 10 years and having talked to literally probably 500 doubters, most doubt, we've actually done some experiments. I work with a clinical psychologist, but most doubt is emotional. It is not grounded.
Yeah.
Factually. And the knife cuts both ways. That's unbelieving doubt as well as Christian doubt.
That's absolutely right.
So when you say, well, look how many people, they did a survey, and in this certain classroom at this university, 90% of the kids believe with this. Well, when you're asking a really charged question, I mean, think about questions like, did you vote for Obama or not? Do you like Israel or do you like the Arab nations? When you think of really loaded questions, America or Russia, you know, when you think of issues like that, there are really polarized views, and people generally vote their worldviews. They vote where they're coming from, not where the facts are. And that does happen. You say, well, that cuts both ways. It does. It does. That's true of Christians. That's true of non-Christians. But you know, a popularity headcount isn't a way to get this either, because you know, people say, well, then if you guys had such good arguments, how come more people don't believe? Because most people don't believe because there are good arguments. That's not why they believe.
Right.
They believe because it makes them feel good or not, or because Jesus tells you to do certain things or stop doing certain things, and that bugs me or makes me happy. Those are the reasons we decide.
Yeah.
You know.
If you
like for Obama, I mean, I'm not telling you who to vote for. I just read an apologetic the other day by some British, prominent British evangelicals arguing Americans shouldn't fight against the healthcare system. We're supposed to be doing that. But the only point I'm making is if you're getting money, if you're getting entitlements, guess who you're voting for?
Right. The person who gives them.
That's not an objective decision. And if you're not getting money, guess who you're voting for?
Right.
Now, maybe if you weren't getting money and now tomorrow you're going to get it, you might change your vote.
Yeah,
but
that makes sense.
Not because that's the best system or best person or not.
And I think you're familiar with Craig Hazen, the director of the Biola Apologetics Program.
I know Craig very well.
Yeah. I think it was him who said one time, apologetics, and for the listeners, apologetics, you know, is evidence for Christianity. Apologetics will never, it's not the door to salvation. It merely fills in the potholes on the road to the door. You know, meaning, you hear these arguments like this, and we know, I mean, almost never, every once in a while, but almost never does someone hear a logical argument for the existence of God. They go, oh my goodness, the cosmological argument and the acronym FEET for the resurrection of Jesus, and they just fall down on their knees and worship him.
The Kalam argument, just what I've always wanted my whole life.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. You know, but these are not things that convince somebody. And as we teach in our apologetics classes here, people reject God or they have intellectual objections as a cover for what's really going on inside. And
exactly. Back to the political thing or back to the football team.
Yeah.
You know, why don't you want, pick a team, why don't you want the New Orleans Saints to win? because my team's in second place and they're in first. And so I hate them. I mean, there's other reasons. I have another reason for asking this question. Not do I have any problems with black and gold being together. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not what the question is.
Right. And so, you know, if
unfortunately, we decide for the wrong reasons, Christians included.
Yeah, and you know, so listeners today, if you're listening and you have had some intellectual objections to Christianity, I hope that maybe you'll just step back and say, maybe my intellectual objections are really covering the fact that I've been mad at God about something, mm-hmm. or maybe a church has hurt you in the past, and maybe we need to help come to terms with what's going on there, because I'll be the first to admit, churches, Christians, we're not perfect. And sometimes we put expectations on God that God doesn't fulfill, and we come out looking at God saying, you know what, if this is who God is, I don't want anything to do with them. Look, we've got the arguments. We've got the reasons to believe in Jesus. Let's not throw away God because we have a problem with what happened in our life. And,
amen.
You know, if that's you today, if you're struggling with that, I would just love to have you contact me. I had a guy last week come in. He's going through some crazy stuff with his family now. His wife's leaving him. His kids are gone. I had another guy come in today, same deal. And they're always asking, where's God in this? And I would love a chance to sit down with any of you and talk about that, because I believe that your story's not over yet. God hasn't finished writing your story. He wants you to know him. And, you know, Jesus is there. He's willing to offer mercy and forgiveness for whatever we've done. I mean, this is reality. We're not dealing with some mythological figure. This is reality we're dealing with. And no Joseph Atwell, no one like him has come up with an argument that proves God doesn't exist, that proves Jesus isn't here. And, you know, for those of us that doubt, we just need to know. There's answers out there.
Right. And it's crazy because, you know, people heard that Atwell came out with this book. And I've had people tell me, when are you guys going to tackle this? I'm like, mm-hmm. we're going to get it. We're going to get into it here in a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and so people have been actually waiting for somebody to answer this.
Yeah.
So.
And hopefully we provide them with a good answer. You know, we might need to take another week and just, you know, answer some of these objections that he's come up with. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Gary Habermas, I am so glad you joined us today. You've really, really clear-cut answers to these things. You really put a nail in the coffin, so amen. To speak. There's really not a lot here. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks, guys. No, hey, you guys, a lot of wisdom there at the end. And for those who are thinking, wow, well, you know, if Christians and non-Christians make decisions for the wrong reasons, we all go according to our emotions, or we all go according to what team we like, so to speak.
Yeah.
Then who's right? And again, you guys are correct from the beginning of this program. What's right is what the facts say. And someone's going to say, who's facts? Well, that's where you guys come in, because if they wanted to study the facts, I'd say to somebody, you want to study the facts? Do you think the facts are relevant? Let's study it together.
Amen. Yeah,
that's
awesome.
That's
where you're going to get them on the best turf.
That's right awesome. There. And we would. We'd be willing to sit down with anyone who's hearing this and just say, hey, let's look at these facts and let's talk about what's going on. Because, you know, I've had Christians or churches offend me in the past. Mm-hmm. God hasn't always met my expectations. God hasn't always met your expectations, it sounds like.
That's right. That's so. Right. My wife died in 1995. Closest person in the world to me.
Uh-huh.
And I had four children still at home. My youngest child was only 9 years old.
Wow.
You know, so.
And when you go through stuff like that, you can ask the question, what is God doing? Or you can just walk away. And we're just going to ask people today, don't walk away. Let's ask that question together, because I don't believe God's done writing your story. Can I get an amen from that?
Amen.
That's a good point, guys. That's a great point.
All right. Hey, thanks for being on our show today. Thanks to listeners
at
truthrevolution.tv, and come on out to Revolution Church, and we'll see you next Sunday for the Truth Revolution Show.